Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Capri Willis. Capri has dedicated her life to serving others. Her journey is one of selflessness, compassion, and unwavering dedication to her community, both in her role as a Navy corpsman and as the CEO of Take Care of Our Vets, a nonprofit organization aimed at aiding homeless veterans and their families. And we'll get more into what Take Care of Our Vets is all about. But first, I want to welcome you to the show, Capri. I'm really glad to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Can you tell us a little bit about your time in the Navy? You served kind of a few different places, but maybe take it a step back from there. What motivated you to get into the military, and tell us a little bit about your time in service?
Absolutely. So I started out, I signed up in Corsicana, Texas, and I was going to college out there in Navarro. Got into a little trouble as a teenager, just got into a scuffle with a girl, lost my volleyball scholarship, just made the wrong decision in life. And mind you, I've never been in a fight my whole life. Okay. So I got into this scuffle with this girl. I lost my scholarship. I got kicked out. I came back, but I was on restriction. Like, they didn't let me go to any football games. It was class to my dorm. In transition, I ran across a recruiter, and he told me about this great life being in the military, because I didn't choose. I don't know if I talked to a Navy one at the time, but I think maybe I talked to one. Clearly, I talked to somebody.
Sure.
And what sold me was that I could play sports in the military. And you know, I get to travel, seeing all the things. So I joined from there in 2005. I came in undesignated, so I had no rate. I had no job. I was just a person in the military wearing a uniform. So for 2 years, I tried everything. We, you know, just went to different departments. In the Navy, we have undesignated seamen. So you can like go anywhere where any department needs help and see if that's where you want to work.
Got it.
So we had, boats, I'm trying to keep it in line. I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody that's listening knows what this is, but sure. We have undesignated people. So we had boat stuff. We had medical. We had engineering. We had admin. And I tried all of it. And I really just kind of took into the medical part. So I finally went to medical school, or corpsman school, sorry. Went to corps school, came back and loved it. It was very trying at times, but I did love being a corpsman while I was in, for sure.
Yeah. And so that background that you had, so you got to bounce around and try a bunch of different things. You got to really experience all of what the Navy has to offer, right? I mean,
they don't offer it anymore. I don't know if they offer it for you to come undesignated anymore. Mm-hmm. But it was a great opportunity to see if this is what, not if this is what you wanted to do, you still had to serve your time, but sure, what you wanted to do.
Right.
And I literally worked every, I've always been one of those girls that's like, I want to try it and I can say if I don't like it. Mm-hmm. So I tried literally every department, and there were a few, it was like, hell no, you can't get me in here. So it was a good experience. I wish they still offered it, but I don't think they offer it anymore.
That is pretty cool. I don't think I've ever heard of that. And I was on the Army side anyway, so I didn't have much interaction with Navy while I was in. But I don't think I've ever heard of anyone who went in that way. So that's kind of interesting to me to learn that that was an option, at least at one point, not anymore. But so you landed on being a corpsman. What drew you to that? What was kind of your the thing that said, yeah, this is for me?
Decision making.
Yeah,
it was. I'm a person that serves, and When I tried the admin side, it was too much paperwork and I wasn't feeling the fulfillment of service there. Mm-hmm. Like, even though I was helping, it was more behind the scene. Whereas in the medical field, I'm actually touching you, talking you, helping you, serving you, having an impression on your life. And that was very big for me, being in the service, because it's like you're in the service to serve your country. Mm-hmm. And I was really big on serving my people, my fellow shipmates, right? So when I got a dose of it, like, oh, I'm sick, doc, and all this, like, can you help me? And the next day, like, thank you. Like, that rewarding feeling that I felt, I was like, oh, yeah, sign me up for this. I love this.
Right.
And so that's what made me go, Corbin.
It does make sense, too, because I'm just kind of joking, thinking about, when someone in finance does their job right, well, it's sort of just expected that it's mm-hmm. done right. Like, that's just what you do. The payroll comes in and it's correct. Okay, well, you're not going to go out of your way to go thank that person. It's just supposed to be.
When you
do your job as a corpsman correctly, you're making people feel better, whether mm-hmm. they're sick or they're injured or whatever. Like, they're going to maybe come out and seek you out and thank you for that. And so it's, you're going to get that. And I'm not trying to say that, like, you're doing it just for the pat on the back and the accolades mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. But there's that gratification that you get from helping someone and seeing the result of the work that you put in.
Absolutely.
And I'm not knocking on the finance people. I realize the way I,
love you the way guys. I said it.
You know, the money doesn't flow without you guys. So clearly that is an important job. So going through your career in the Navy, any deployments, overseas or anything like that?
Absolutely. So I started off in San Diego, beautiful San Diego. I went on it's called a med pack. So we were on a hospital ship. It was a USNS Mercy. There were two. We had USNS Mercy and then USNS Comfort. And I was on the Mercy. So we went Guam, Djibouti. No. Did we go to Djibouti? That was so long ago. We went to Hawaii. We went to Philippines, which that was kind of like eye-opening. We went to a couple of other places, and we served the world on our hospital ship. And people flew in. They got, surgery, all the things. But at that time, I was not a medic. I was a food service assistant. I told you, I tried everything.
You did, okay?
Yeah. I tried everything.
And that's
when I started in the niche of it, yeah.
So those two ships that you just talked about, were those the ships that they were using, like, during COVID? They had them, like, in New York or other places. They had those ships kind of to help with the hospital overflow and all that kind of stuff, right? Yeah.
I want to say they renamed them then, but
okay.
Because the Navy will decom and recom a ship real quick. So
sure.
I don't know if it's still called the same, but yes, those are the same type of ships.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So getting out of the military after your time in the Navy was over, how was that transition for you?
I have to circle back real quick before I answer that question, because that was actually a very pivotal moment when getting out of the military.
Okay.
But I did do the hospital ship. I did do a tour in Afghanistan, and that's one that's going to lead me to that transition.
Sure.
A tour in Afghanistan, and I also did a deployment that didn't really have a name, but I also did a deployment on a DDG. So I had three deployments under my belt, one boots on ground and two on ship.
Okay. Awesome.
So with that being said, the transition from such structure to civilian, it took me about maybe a year and a half to kind of get into the groove of being a civilian human versus a military human. You lose all sense of, I don't have to wake up. I don't have to put on a uniform. I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. Then you lose some kind of self-worth a little bit mm-hmm. because, like, you knew, like, I'm serving my country. I'm putting on this uniform. I'm doing things that others couldn't do. And you're so proud. Right.
Right.
And then you become a civilian and there's no have to anymore. And I took a year off. I didn't work. I didn't, you know, thankfully I saved all my coins. I didn't work. I didn't go to school. I just took a year off. I slept my life away. I just wanted something different than what I was doing for 6 years. And emotionally it had a toll on me because I had no sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't going to work. I wasn't doing anything. So the transition was really, really rough for me. I almost went back in. It's kind of that equivalent, like whenever an inmate gets released, they try to do whatever they want to do. They can to get back in because they're so into this lifestyle. And it was, I was almost on my way back in.
I like how you kind of relate the military experience to prison.
I still love you guys. I still love you. But it has the same kind of structure, you know, the same kind of.
Well, it does. And you're not, I don't think you're alone in saying that, because you do get out and you realize nobody is there who's going to come knock on your door and drag your ass out of bed to make sure you're, you know, at formation on time, or you're wearing the right uniform, or that you're, you know, doing whatever. Nobody's coming to grab you out. If you want to stay in bed for a year, clearly you could, right? Like, no,
I literally did it.
I know exactly. That's what I'm saying. And nobody's coming to drag you out. If you don't have that discipline yourself,
absolutely.
You know, other people are busy with what they got going on in life, and they're not going to drop everything to, you know, come and find you like they did in the military.
They can't even relate because they have no sense of that. They're just like, oh yeah, I wake up with an alarm and I go to work every day.
Yeah.
It's not the same, you know?
If anything, you might've gotten it must be nice that you could do that, you know?
I still get it to this day. It irks my soul every time somebody says it. I'm just like, you don't know what we had to go through for it to be nice, whatever that means. But yeah, I hate that saying when people are like, oh, you don't have to work full time. Must be nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that's, I guess, you know, some people, they just don't understand like what you went through, what you may still be going through. But, you know, it's different. It just is different. It's hard to, you know, put words around it, but, but you eventually started Take Care of Our Vets, which we mentioned a little bit earlier. Tell us about the organization and what the mission is and the vision behind it and everything like that.
Yeah. So I think it's not yet a nonprofit, but it's a sector under my business.
Okay.
So it's really fueled by my business. So we haven't made it a nonprofit just yet, because that takes a whole nother situation. It so does. Right now it's under my business, which is Jeffrey Spencer. It's a skincare brand. What fueled me, 1 year, you know, we didn't spend Christmas with the family. We just spent Christmas feeding the homeless, clothing the homeless, all of that. And it was astounding how many veterans I came across during that time on Christmas. And I was just like, we have so many resources. Why are you homeless? Or we have so many resources. Why aren't you with a family? Or it was just crazy at how many veterans I came across that Christmas. So my grandmother and I, we're very, you know, we're service-based. So I talked to her and I was just like, hey, I want to do something for, you know, the homeless community. I didn't want to go into housing. I didn't want to do things that was out of my scope. Okay. I'm a skincare, makeup, beauty brand. That is what my whole life is about, in fashion. So I wanted to kind of marry the two. Mm-hmm. So I thought about, what do veterans need while they're on the streets, right? Or if they're transitioning, or if they're experiencing temporary homelessness, what do they need when they are unhoused? And we, you know, after talking to my grandmother, we were like, they need blankets, they need toiletries, they need, for the women that were out there, which I was shocked to see, they need sanitary napkins, just all the things to keep their sanitary selves up here so they don't deteriorate, right? So they don't get dental, they do have medical and they do have dental, but do they use them? Not really. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to aid in that health part, the health and beauty part, while they're, you know, experiencing homelessness. So that's how TCOB came. So we put together kits, and it's not just veteran based, because, you know, I'm not going to turn down a homeless person and say, hey, no, if you're a vet, you can't get anything.
Sure.
But that's where my heart is. So if there's a vet, two people in line, one is a vet and one is a civilian, unfortunately, I'm going to go to the vet.
Sure.
Like last. But yeah, I just wanted to, you know, help them with health and beauty while they're experiencing that. And that was the whole start of TCOB.
You know, one of the things that I have heard of, I've never been homeless myself, but one of the things I've heard from people who either had been homeless or work with the homeless people, is that similar to what you were talking about, like with prison or getting back into the military, is that sometimes that becomes part of the identity that some of these people have, where their chosen family, if you will, are the people who live with them on the streets in or in the homeless shelters, or, you know, any of these places that they're at. And when things start turning around for them, and, you know, they're in a place where they can maybe get their own place and move off the streets, it's almost like they kind of don't want to, and it can be hard sometimes, right?
Yeah. So in the many of conversations that I had, I've come up with a couple reasons why my fellow veterans are homeless, right? Their family kicked them out because they came back with mental, you know, issues. So then they have nowhere to go because of the actions that they were doing to their families, with the family not understanding. And most of these people were older, so they don't know of their resources, because when they were letting people out in the back then, we didn't have this like deboarding and mental health clinics. They didn't have those resources. So it's mental health. That's one of them, right? Another one is they don't want to follow anybody's rules. If you are not lieutenant, sergeant, you know, petty officer, captain, they don't want to be housed and follow a civilian's rules. So they're just like, no, keep me on the streets. That way I have full control of what I do. And then the ignorance of benefits. They're just like, I didn't even know that was accessible to me. I didn't know that was offered to me. And unfortunately, a lot of people are not just going out to the streets like, hey, are you a veteran? You have this available, this available, this available. Would you like for me to help you?
Right.
So it's so many different pockets when it comes to homeless veterans that they fall in, that there's a gap. And unfortunately, I'm not the person to mold that gap, but that we do have really good resources out here in Dallas that are helping bridge the gap. Housing Forward, formerly known as Dallas Homeless Alliance, they do very well with housing veterans and homeless people. So last time they did a pit count, which is, I wrote that down, a point in time. When they did it, let's say in January, there was 25 homeless veterans. When they did it again in April, it was none. So they're definitely paving the way in housing our homeless veterans, but still there's 25 versus, you know, thousands that are out there.
Yeah, exactly. And there's thousands, you know, across the country, and, you know, the reasons that they end up on the street are varied. You know, it could be family issues or whatever, where they get kicked out of the house or, you know, but not knowing about some of the resources that are available is a problem. And how do you get that information to somebody who, you know, doesn't even have the basics to take care of themselves? Right. How do you distribute that information?
So, you know, when they do come in, right, the VA is very adamant about providing paper, because a lot of these things are digital now. Like, sign up on your phone, sign up on your computer, or email us. And most of the time, these people are not technological savvy. They do not have access to a computer or phone. So it's really fine. If they come into the VA, they'll have all the paperwork they need. Word of mouth. there are people outside passing around pamphlets and, you know, all of that, but it's just not hitting the masses, unfortunately. And again, I said that's a hole that I hope somebody will one day fix. But to be honest, it's really backdated. It's finding the older generation of veterans, because the new generation of veterans, which is myself and people who have gotten out between 20s and 30s, we were bombarded with all the resources on getting out so that we didn't have these issues, right? I don't know how to fix. I wish I could, but it's really just finding one hole, which is mental health, finding another hole, which is, you know, resource ignorance. It's and then bridging that, right?
Yeah.
But we try. Yeah, we definitely try.
I think to your point earlier, there were just not the resources available for some of the older veterans, you know, the Vietnam era and, you know, sometime around there. Those resources that we know about now, they just didn't exist. And even if they did, whatever programs did exist back then, because there was some stuff, but not to the extent that we have now, you know, try remembering back decades ago to some briefing that you might have had that said, hey, here's a couple things that are available to you. You're probably not going to remember, right? Yeah. And so I even remember myself going through some of that, like, as I'm getting out, it felt like you're drinking from a fire hose and trying to catch every last drop. It's like, you can't. It's impossible, you know.
Information overload.
It is, yeah. So so even the younger veterans, unfortunately, even though they're more probably technologically savvy and they have access to the information, it's just like, how do you remember all that stuff, especially when you're in a position where you're not homeless and they say, hey, we have these resources for homeless veterans. You kind of immediately put that out of your mind because it's like, well, I'm not homeless. I don't need that. So I'm not going to remember it.
Right.
So to your point, having the paper resources at the VAs or the people who are going around handing out these pamphlets or flyers or whatever, that to me is a great way to get that information out there to the people who need it when they need it. Because, you know, you and I talking right now, and I say, hey, here's a resource for something that you don't need. You're going to be like, okay, well, it's good that that exists, but tomorrow you're probably going to forget that I even mentioned it. So,
you
know, so giving it to them when they need it, you know, in a format that they can consume it and use it. I think that's a good way to go. Like you mentioned.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So take care of our vets, you know, supporting the veterans with those kind of care items and the health and beauty type things. What are some of the items and services that you do provide, and in what ways are you know, either collecting donations or what ways are you trying to you know, collect these types of things?
So we are no monetary. We only collect items. All toiletries, deodorant, like I said, sanitary napkins, blankets. We do take water. We do provide razors, but it's really a touch and go because I don't want to provide somebody with a weapon. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, people do need to shave. You know, combs, brushes, anything that you use on a daily basis when it comes to your health and hygiene, we need as well. So I was going to say next week, but I can't say that. So once a month, we take about 25 kits and we pass them out. We're actually doing that for this month. We're actually doing that for this month next week. So if should someone have it on their heart to donate, you can email our email and I'll give it to you later. We can email our email and then I'll give you an address and you can just send over whatever you have or whatever you want to. Toothbrush, toothpaste, like I said, calm oil, beard oil, lotion, sunscreen, anything that will help protect people's hygiene, wipes, diapers, actually, because, you know, some of the kids are on the streets as well. Mm-hmm. All of those things. Yeah. And when it comes to the blankets, we do request that they're new because you know, we've had bug situation in some of the donated blankets. So only new blankets from here on out.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, kids being on the street too. And that's, it's heartbreaking to see, you know, kids being impacted by this type of thing as well. But, you know, I guess that just goes to prove that, like, no one's immune to it. It can be something that happens to just about anyone. Just because you're, you know, a newborn or, you know, a toddler age kid doesn't mean that, you know, the decisions and impact of, you know, what happened to your parents isn't going to impact you too. And so that may end up, you know, putting you there in that situation. So, you know, we want to obviously get them off the street, but in the meantime, you know, making it as comfortable for them as possible so that they have a sense of, you know, just feeling like being a human, I guess, right?
Normalcy, is that kind of sense of normalcy, because it's not normal to be on the street, right? Even if you choose, because there are men and women who choose to be on the streets. So that's fine. You know, I'm not going to argue with you. If that's what you choose, I'm not going to argue with you. But I would love your experience in these times to be as healthy, as clean, as freeing as possible. And that's why we created TCOB.
Yeah. And for the people who are like, who chooses this, you know, kind of thing, like for the listeners, there are people who do choose it. And it was kind of like what I was saying before, how they sort of relate to the people who are there on the street, and they kind of just feel like that's where they belong. That's where they, and you know, they get, one other thing you mentioned is they, it's nobody's telling them what they need to do or where they need to be or, you know, anything. It's, they don't have to live by anybody else's rules. They are their own, you know, boss. Their own boss at that point.
Whoever they want to be. Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
They can have as much freedom as they want. I mean, that's kind of the ultimate freedom. Seek. There's nothing tying them down, right?
No, and that's what they seek. They want full control over their lives. And if they use one of these resources, it's going to come with some stipulations, rules, and regulations.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I can live out here in the street and live my life as best as I want to. I control whatever I do, however I do, whenever I do. Mm-hmm. When you go to a homeless shelter or a resource, you have to be in by 8. You have to shower. You have to brush your teeth. You have to eat at a certain time. You have to leave at a certain time. They're like, oh no, I don't want to have to do that.
Right.
And it's just like, we're, you know, as a nation, we're always talking about homeless people, like, you know, like there's a negative connotation of, you know, about homelessness. And I hate that sometimes, because most of it, I can't say percentage because I don't want to be that girl, but it has to do with mental issues, not issues. I won't even say issues, but mental capacities. Because it could be me right now. If I chose to live on the streets because I don't want to have to deal with bills and family and car notes or anything like that, if that was my life, I would choose it, because I'm running from something that I just don't want to deal with.
Right.
And nobody's making me do it or not do it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it probably has a huge percentage, and again, I'm not going to put a number to it, but there's probably a huge percentage of people who are on the streets dealing with some mental issues. Mm-hmm. You know, whether I'm not going to get into what it could be, but you know, whatever it is that they're dealing with, they might just see it as, this is a better solution. And mm-hmm. you know, we don't see it a lot of times in society, because we see it as a nuisance, where, mm-hmm. you know, someone's sleeping on a sidewalk and you got to walk around them or something, you know, that seems like a nuisance to most people. And, you know, that's just the life that sometimes they've chosen. Yeah. You know?
Absolutely. It's an unsolvable problem, to be honest. Like, I go to all these council meetings and listen to all these different podcasts and nonprofit parties, and it's just like, well, we're trying to cure or fix homelessness. I'm like, oh, let's be realistic. Unless you just provide a space where this person has no rules, no regulations, and nothing, they just like, okay, it's a roof and it's it. You're not, unfortunately, you're not going to solve homelessness. You're going to help and aid, but you're never going to solve it.
Right.
But it's, you know, I just try my best to make it as easy as possible, or just
that's right,
livable as possible.
Yeah. And there are people legitimately who don't want to be on the streets. And those are the people, like, you know, when you're talking about solving homelessness, it's like, those are the people you're going to work to get off the streets. There's some people who kind of want to be there. So I don't know what you're really trying to accomplish by helping those people out. In the solving, not in the way that you're doing. That's not what I mean. But, so anyways, it's a complex problem. I think there's a lot of reasons why people end up on the streets. There's a lot of reasons why they stay on the streets. And there's a lot of things just at play there. And I think no matter what, they're still human. And if we can just give them a little dose of humanity. And
we treat dogs better than we treat homeless people. And it's just crazy. And I was going to say this earlier, that just because you see a veteran on the streets does not automatically mean PTSD.
Right.
It cooks my cookies every time. They're like, oh, they must have PTSD and their family kicked them out. I'm like, it pisses me off. I'm like, oh my God, PTSD is not the only thing that a veteran can have. Let's start there.
Sure.
And humans, civilians have PTSD. So it's just, I want to fix the world and just be like, hey, just treat them as a human, not as anything more or less. But yeah, right. I think dogs get treated better than homeless people, period.
Yeah. I think, you know, in a lot of ways that's probably true.
You
get a dog, they're in a shelter, and someone comes around and says, hey, we're bringing you home. We're gonna, you know,
PETA is a very big advocate for pet, you know, animals. Can we get the same for veterans to that magnitude, right? Sure. The VA is there, right? We get it. But to that magnitude where people are like shunning you and banning you and blackening you out like you don't exist anymore because you did an animal harm, but yet this person serves. Anyway,
we could probably keep going on that one, but we'll take a break on that. So I do want to give you an opportunity to let people know, you said there's an email address or some way that they can get in touch to, you know, send in donations to help out these folks.
Yes, absolutely. So, like, again, I told you that it's a hub under Jeffrey Spencer, which is the name of the company. So the email is hello@jeffreyspencer.com. I'm pretty sure you'll just add that
I'll put that in the show notes. So
folks, I don't want to spell it. I don't want to have to spell it for him. But no, yes, @jeffreyspencer.com. And just send an email and say, hey, we would like to donate some items, and then we will respond and send you a address on where you can send these items.
Great. Yeah. And like you said, like new items, not like, you know, the thing that you pulled out of a box that's being eaten by, you know, moths and, you know, all this kind of stuff. You don't want to send that type of thing over. You want to send something. Again, we're trying to give these people a dose of humanity. You don't want to send garbage.
You're trying to clean out your house. No.
Right.
If you could help it, we would love to have newer items.
Yes, exactly. So, well, before we wrap this show up, a lot of times the topics that we talk about are a little heavy. So I always like to try to end an episode with a little bit of humor. And I think you may enjoy this, being a corpsman in your background. This segment that I like to do whenever I have a veteran on the show is called Is It Service Connected? And it's kind of a America's Funniest Home Videos type show where, you know, we watch a quick segment of service members doing something stupid and getting injured or getting in precarious situations. And this particular video, I haven't watched it all the way through yet, but this is, it's just a few seconds. I'm just looking at the kind of opening part of it right now. It's got a Marine in quite the situation, and I'm going to share this so you can see it. This Marine is right now on the razor wire, like straight up stuck to it, like he's a piece of Velcro slapped on. This looks painful.
But it looks horrible.
And I'm just thinking, like, you're probably going through this like with a corpsman's lens, and like, how do you get this guy out of here? Because this is not the situation you'd want to be in. But let's take a look. Yeah, he's definitely stuck on this razor wire, and they're trying from like different angles trying to get him out, and he is in there.
Is it service connected? Absolutely.
Hell yeah, it is.
Yes, it is. Oh no.
Oh my god.
If you are in uniform in anything, service connected.
Yeah. That one definitely. That guy, whatever happened there, he looked like really stuck on there too. Like that took several people, and they had tools and stuff trying to get him out.
I don't know what it is about barbed wire, or just I forget that's called something else because of the shape of it.
Yeah.
It's meant to F you up. It is meant to murder whatever it is in it. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. A lot of patience and some tools is all it's gonna.
Yeah, that stuff is nasty, and it is definitely meant to mess you up. Like, don't screw with it. It's like the briefing that you get. Like, don't mess with the wildlife. Don't mess with the razor wire either.
Razor wire. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That stressed me out just a second ago.
I'm sure he turned out just fine after all that.
War wounds, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, it'll probably give a few scars that, you know, make him look like Rambo.
A few identical scars all over the body, but he'll be just fine.
Anyways, thank you again for taking the time to come on and sharing what you do, and for the continued service that you're doing, serving our veteran community, the homeless veteran community, through Take Care of Our Vets. And for the listeners, again, if you're interested in helping out the homeless veteran population, we'll put that email address in the show notes so you can reach out and figure out where to send in those donations. So thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.